Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost an hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. We do that for 50 minutes every afternoon. Interesting things to talk about this afternoon, as always. And, of course, DNC time, right? So now we get into the good old Democrats' opportunity to put themselves on the national stage and see what they have to offer as they get all geared up for the election season. And now with the DNC chair stepping down completely after what appears to be some interesting controversy, this seems to be new, which wasn't Sanders already concerned about this during the primary season? He seemed like he was on to what was going on with the DNC even then, and surprising to me that he didn't do more to kind of try to step in and correct this. But now we have a degree of controversy as this election cycle begins, and what does this ultimately mean? We'll talk about that and a whole heck of a lot more. Stick around. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back in just a moment.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon. Thank you for joining us. Follow me over on Facebook. You'll see all the things we talk about over there. Like the interesting question, I guess, that Crux Now is asking when it comes to what is happening with the Clinton campaign. Now, Kane, who is a self-professed traditional Catholic, on board with her. She herself, a professed Methodist, Sunday school teacher, you name it, asking the question, posing the question, can this be the place where people of faith, discerning people of faith, go with their vote? Do they take this now to the Democrats? Now, most would say, as would I, certainly in this case, that when you have someone as rabidly pro-abortion as certainly Clinton has been with her voting record in the Senate, and someone who has been as gleefully anti-life, certainly from a standpoint of executions in Virginia, as then-Governor Tim Kaine, it's a big no. No, I'm sorry. We can't do that. But I think there's a lot of individuals asking, based on what we've seen so far, where do we get? Because you know, we're back to the old two choices. Well, it's got to be this. I got to do my civic duty. I got to vote. It's got to be for one of these guys. And I love it, as always the case is. My liberal friends, of course, will say that my voting for a third-party candidate is only going to put Trump in the White House, while my conservative friends say, Leo, your third-party candidate vote is only going to put Clinton in the White House, which I'm guessing one of them is right. I have to assume that. I don't believe that my third-party candidate will win the presidency, but I can vote with conscience, with a very clear conscience, knowing that I'm voting on principle. That principle being that I am going to vote for the individual who I think lines up most with what I believe, not with the one who is not as far off the path as the other. Whatever, right? We talk about that a lot, the lesser of two evils. So it's very interesting to see what's happening here with a profession, what appears to be a sense, and I'm not judging their faith walk by any means. I'm not saying that. I did question the interesting conversion, apparently, the recent conversion of Donald Trump into Christianity after meeting with the evangelical leaders. Apparently, he became one too. Now, that's a little bit weird. These guys seem to have at least they have a track record of involvement, participation, and church attendance. You could at least look at that and say, well, there's something there that might seem to suggest authenticity, at least in that respect. But when it comes down to principle, there's abysmal failures here. And I think we can judge that. We could look at this and say, this is not the way we vote. Now, granted, please realize that as Catholics, one is free to choose to vote for whomever they wish if the reason, and I know this is gray, and I get that, and the grayness, I think, is one of the toughest areas in faith because we want everything to be black and white, and we want to say it's either this or that, there's nothing in between, and that's simply not true. We talked about Amoris Laetitia and the recent document from Pope Francis I'm referring to there with all of this stuff from St. Thomas Aquinas, Doctor of the Church, St. Thomas Aquinas, talking about the nuance and delicacy of grayness and the fact that there is something about these areas that are simply not either this nor that. They are in some sort of middle ground that has to be dealt with in that fashion. So it is true, and please realize it's true, that as a Catholic, one can vote for either Trump or Clinton. You can, in good conscience, if the reason why you're voting for them is not because of what they stand for on anti-life or anti-Catholic agendas. You could do that. My conscience will not allow me to do that. Understand that. Your conscience might. And you can say, well, Leo, how could that be the case? Well, it's because we all have differing degrees of formation in our conscience. We do. We got to realize that. We're all on different points in the journey. And some of us are maybe more scrupulous with this, and scrupulosity, not a good thing, not necessarily, right? Scrupulosity can lead you to all sorts of, it's like a spiritual neurosis, that you're so concerned about certain sin issues and things that it's come somewhat crippling. Maybe that's where I am with this, right? Maybe I've gotten to the point of hyper-scrupulosity that I cannot bring myself, even though I know that I could be free to say, okay, well, I can kind of cull out something good of this particular candidate, whichever one that we seem to think are only two, whichever one I could cast that vote in good conscience. Theoretically speaking, yes, that's possible. Practically for me, I can't. I cannot do that. And that's me. So I'm not saying, and don't think I'm saying this, that a Catholic cannot vote for Trump, and by doing so, you've immediately excommunicated yourself. Or Clinton. I'm not going to make those statements. If you can justify your vote with a truly formed conscience, then that's up to you. I can't. I just can't. I've read the Faithful Citizenship document. Not that I didn't know that stuff already, but after reading that, I am 110% convinced that neither of the two leading candidates allow me to cast my vote for them. That is the conclusion I drew. Now, you may read this and go, come on. not so bad. We're talking about the lesser of two evils here, which is always the case in any election. It's got to be some degree of compromise. Not always getting 100% of everything you want. It's okay. That's how we're going to do it. I cannot. Interesting Googling of Trumpets. Apparently, this is posted on my Facebook page. You can check it out. Huffington Post talking about this. There are those trying to find out if Trumpets is in the Bible. Trumpets. We do hear about trumpets. Maybe that's the thing, right? The trumpet, not the trumpets. The trumpet blasting, blaring, ushering in the apocalypse. Perhaps this is it. Could this be it? Maybe that's what you're referring to. But that's just kind of interesting. As we know that there's been higher Google searches now than ever in any, well, you know, granted, there's more online activity in this election than ever before, but you know, we've had the internet around long enough to observe this, to see what's happening, and unprecedented amounts of third-party candidate searches. We've seen that. And the most interesting time for that was on the heels of Trump's acceptance speech at the RNC. Bam! Google searches off the charts. Got to find anybody with this guy. What the heck? What do we do now? So there's a lot of reaction that can be seen in the search engine activity all around this election, which that, again, should kind of give us an interesting reflection here to go, wow, what are we dealing with here? But Trumpets, apparently, there are those who have thought that, but was it? Is there a biblical reference to this Trumpets? maybe they're adding up the letters and doing the numerology thing and trying to get to some sort of, is this the mark of the beast that's coming? Is that what we're talking about here? But the however you want to call it, the unfortunate reality or the fortunate reality, I choose the latter here to say the fortunate reality is that whole understanding of the revelation can be personally applicable if you get it. If you get this understanding of it's a spiritual personal journey to get through this battle, which is truly a battle in this life. It's a battle to stay on track, to stay focused in your faith that will ultimately end in victory should we continue to fight this personally, not the metaphorical or the exaggerated or the eventual, are we all waiting for? We're dealing with it on the personal level if we have embraced our faith. It's a pretty profound way of seeing this. And if you see that, maybe you stop Googling up stuff, wondering if this is ushering in the end of the world. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this. Redbox Media, now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me on Facebook. Lots of interesting conversations over there. Not everything that makes it to the show. Like, I hadn't planned on talking about this, but then it kind of ties into this other, so it's kind of somewhat sort of almost related. And that is the looking for ticket scalping. Not to buy tickets at illegal jacked up prices, but I used to buy tickets inexpensively after the show would start, a technique I've used flawlessly, repeatedly at many shows. And then most recently at a show where I was planning to do this because I hadn't been at this particular venue in years upon years. And I was used to them. I know where they are. I know where all the guys are. They're out there. They'll be waiting and they'll be holding the sign, "I need tickets." Right? So they don't need tickets. They're selling tickets. That's what they did. And without fail, I could always get, even if I had, like at this particular show, I had seats where I had tickets on a lawn and I wanted to get seats, I could always find somebody selling tickets, get better seats than even what I had. Never failed. Wait until the show starts, pennies on the dollar. $5 a piece? Great. Got it. Good. Go. Done. I've done it many, many times. And I couldn't find scalpers at this particular event and I was concerned. Where are they going? They've all been driven into the seedy world of the internet now, right? They had a legitimate business at one time. They're out there. Now, apparently, it's all StubHub, which I still don't really know how to use. Not like that. If I could wait and buy tickets for a show that is starting at that particular point, now we're talking, right? The demand just plummeted, and they're going to get rid of these tickets for nothing. Was a beautiful, beautiful experience for a number of years that never failed. Now, apparently those days are gone, unfortunately. Related to what I was talking about, because also gone are the days when you could just go to a concert and the only distracting element was the usage of certain you know what I mean. Things that you may catch a waft of as you're sitting at the concert. That may be distracting, but you didn't have to worry about somebody's screen in front of you or someone videotaping the entire thing or someone actually trying to have a conversation on their mobile device, screaming to someone that they're talking to while trying to be at the concert. I mean, these are things that we used to not experience, right? Now, the artists, at least a handful of them, are saying Pokemon Go is not going to go at my show. And as we know, Apple has already begun the work of the technology to say, we're going to make it so there are certain areas where functionality of the phone is shut down. You can't do certain things in these zones. And I certainly get it. I would, if I were an artist working as hard as they do, and I know they work very hard, don't think that they don't, and you're performing and you get out there and all you see are people either illegally capturing your show or playing Pokemon Go, even worse, at least if they're videotaping, they appreciate what you're doing. But if they're playing, and I guess they could be playing Pokemon Go and you'd think they're videotaping, but you don't know. So very, very bizarre dynamics that we deal with these days, but hopefully a solution will be found at some point. Not sure that a solution will ever be found. And this is what I found interesting. I'm going into a concert and I happen to have a pocket knife on me that is actually TSA compatible. I could fly with this knife now based on the changes in regulations. It's a tiny little pocket knife. Could not take it into the concert. However, there were plenty of recreational drug users in there. They got that in without a problem. So my pocket knife, which is legal to own and carry compared to the other stuff that's in there anyway, obviously. Obviously a sore spot. Sorry about that. So I posted this over on my Facebook page over the weekend, getting a little bit of response to this. Now, Donald Trump, the first GOP candidate to leave the unborn out of acceptance speech since 1984. So every acceptance speech by every Republican candidate since 1984 has had at least a reference point saying something to the effect of, and by the way, we are dedicated to protecting life, you name it, at in the, you know, sometimes as definitive as life of the unborn, sometimes as general as we're staunch defenders of life, you name it, whatever, to certainly include an understanding that they're talking about preborn individuals. Trump's the first not to mention that. Not to mention it. Now, I've said all along that this guy is willing to pretty much say anything to convince you that he is who he says he is. When he says it, whenever that is. I was watching Despicable Me over the weekend, which, great movie, undoubtedly. And Gru is there trying to plot his diabolical scheme with the orphans, and he talks about his deceased wife, Debbie, right? And then whatever the Kristen Wiig character is, who is the woman who runs the orphanage, refers back to his wife after he had mentioned her, and he's like, who's Debbie, right? Like, he's already forgotten what he says. I'm surprised it's somewhere along the way that Trump has not kind of circled back around and caught himself, like, who's, what? When did that happen? When did I say that? But he's going to play it, regardless, as though it's legit and it doesn't matter. So, but I think this should be telling, and this is what I've been trying to say, and nobody seems to care. Well, a few seem to care, because there's some sort of Trump-aid out there, Kool-Aid of the Trumpism that has convinced those that no, he's solidly pro-life. We don't have to worry about that. He says he is. Of course, he's solidly pro-life. Well, if that is truly an area of importance, especially in one of the longest, is it the longest on recorded record? It's a long darn acceptance speech of the longest ever. If it's a critically important, vitally pivot point of your campaign, or not even your campaign, of your personal beliefs, who cares about your campaign? Your campaign is going to be expedient to getting votes. But if you really have a conviction on something, don't tell me you're not going to put it in your acceptance speech. Don't tell me you're not going to do that. So I, as you know, I have pledged my support for Soraya Foss. Had her on the show. I wish she had a bigger platform of promotion. She's an independent candidate. She's doing what she can. She doesn't have trunks of money to go out and just dump into political advertising. She's doing what she can. She's getting interviews. She's trying to spread the word. But this is why. This is why. Because you look at the dynamics that exist, and you really, really have to wonder. And again, I'm impressed to see some of my friends on Facebook beginning to see at least a little bit of light. I pray for a brighter ray of sunshine to come in on this and illuminate this completely, so we can all begin to see exactly what the challenges are here. Again, I would hope that says something, that does something, but there are always those who are going to do what they're going to do regardless, so who knows. So there's been a lot of debate, I think, discussion, and maybe an idealistic vision for something of this nature. Some would call it just flat out communism. If you're going to have a living, not a living wage, but a guaranteed wage, a guaranteed allotment to every individual within a country that basically says you're going to get this regardless of what you do. There are those who say, well, that would squash all opportunity. There would be those who would simply take advantage of this. They would not necessarily do anything with it. And apparently, that may not necessarily be the case, at least according to what some studies have shown. Business Insider is talking about this. And I think it's interesting to see that maybe the assumptions that we've made aren't necessarily what is going to end up being the reality. And they do this kind of case study on this, what happened in Kenya, where they were giving kind of an allotment, an opportunity for those without any income to at least have something. And you know what? They were able to at least feed themselves, which is good. And when you think about the dignity of individuals, yes, we want them to have the opportunity to better themselves. We want to provide, as the old adage says, the hand up, not just the hand out. But if someone is so completely destitute that they have no opportunity, we got to start somewhere. So I think it's interesting. You can see the full story over on my Facebook page. You're going to take a look at that Business Insider. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Follow me over on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. You'll see the things we talk about here, over there. Starbucks apparently letting the baristas wear fedoras. Seems to be the new thing, I guess, to wear hats while you're brewing coffee. And I mean, this is nothing new, because remember, the fast food guys used to wear the paper hats. You could get those when you were a kid. I remember going to the burger joint, and that was the highlight. Well, that and the Long John Silver's pirate hat. There was nothing quite as cool as that. And I honestly remember the first time I got the Long John Silver's pirate hat, and it wasn't two-sided. It was just one side of the hat, and then a little strip of cardboard behind that. I was very disappointed, because it used to be two full pieces of a hat, and you could wear it forward or sideways, or however you wanted to wear it. Then it was just a little strip of paper with a facade, and I felt so cheated at that point. What am I going to do with this? But it was fun to take my kids to Burger King recently, and they've got the crowns. They've got this for the kids, so I was happy about that. So maybe the Starbucks fedora for the kids coming soon. The paper fedora for them. We'll see if we come around to that or not. WikiLeaks really doing some interesting stuff to the DNC. As we know, Debbie Wasserman Schultz resigning as the chair of the DNC. And then at first she was going to usher in the convention, now not doing that. And a lot of, you know, I was convinced that the Republican National, or just the Republican Party, let's put it this way. I was convinced the Republican Party had pretty much imploded. But I don't think they're alone. And I think there's a lot of interesting things happening right now, certainly in the establishments of these two parties that maybe we haven't seen in the past. And part of that is because now there's so much readily available when it comes to kind of catching people in the act and showing things for what they are. You know, there was a time we kind of thought that, well, there at least there's something somewhat private about email correspondence, right? Oh, we can get away. We can talk about this. That's email. It's secure. We don't have to worry about that. And now that these things can be hacked and captured, and we can have a electronic trail, not quite the paper trail that we once had, but this electronic trail of saying some very challenged things, I think we've got to be very careful. We've got to realize, and not granted, those who have nothing to worry about have nothing to worry about. You're not doing anything illegal. It doesn't matter. But we got to realize that anything that we say, we share, any exchange, if it's an electronic fashion, even you never know what's being under what's under surveillance, what's being recorded. You there's no way of knowing. So I think this should kind of put us in this mode of hypervigilance of kind of guarding and protecting our own correspondence. Well, could what we say be seen as, you know, misconstrued or misrepresented some way? If it could, well, and granted, that can happen anytime, and I realize that there's no way of guaranteeing complete, definite understanding of everything that we present, no doubt. But if it's obvious through the thread of discussion that we're up to no good and we're basically stacking the deck in our party's favor against those who might potentially change things significantly, like a Bernie Sanders, well, then, yeah, we got to kind of think about what we're doing there. Which, my goodness, you've got to, like him or not, I mean, I don't care what you really think about Sanders, you've got to respect the fact that he is now being a team player. He's not Ted Cruz in this thing. He's not coming out and saying, essentially, he's not going to embrace this candidate, as we've seen what Cruz has done. He's saying, no, now it's time for us all to get on the same page and vote for Clinton, only to be met with boos from that. Because there are those who would rather him take this separatist stand and continue to divide the party even more, which is all Cruz is going to do. But he has much more class than that. He's coming out and saying, look, we got to get behind this candidate. We've got to see the opportunities that exist or the challenges perhaps that exist and do whatever we can to come together as one and vote in unity. We don't see that on the Republican side. But problems, my goodness, in this party, and it'll be interesting to see where it all ends up come November. Still comes down to a popularity contest, and again, we're only in the base of support. Those who are already somewhat politically active, those who are following this, interested in this, and paying attention to it, that's where we are. Debate season, once we get into that, and the general populace begins to pay somewhat attention, little of this will matter. Well, we will have forgotten, unless it's rehashed in the debates. Probably not a lot of attention paid to this by the time November rolls around. We have a tremendous issue with amnesia, right? We forget very, very quickly and move on. So where it goes, time will tell. Speaking of an amnesia of sorts, it's been chronicled that this is a memory lapse that happens to parents and tragic situations that occur. And apparently now the hot car deaths are higher than ever. And there have been those who've looked into this to wonder what exactly is causing this. CNN is reporting this. It's on my Facebook page. You can find the post that I posted there about the original story. But yeah, you think about, especially in those early months of especially new parenting, how challenging it is to get any kind of sleep. You're undoubtedly walking through a sleep deprivation world. And unless you've been there before, unless you've actually had a bizarre schedule that kind of kept you in and out of weird sleep patterns, even those of us who've done that maybe had been doing odd jobs early in our career that kept us awake for most of the week, which was certainly the case for me when I started in radio working midnight to 6 a.m. and then working another full-time job during the day. Oftentimes, literally, there were weeks that went by, where I may have slept 8 hours in a week. I was just catching naps where I could. And you kind of learn how to function, even though it's not easy. You learn how to function on very little sleep. And for me, it was just practice for parenting, because that's pretty much the way it works. But those who've never experienced anything of this nature, you could be a zombie. You could literally just not know at times where you are, what you're doing. And it seems like this is part of this challenge, where there are those who just have such a lapse of judgment, and they're maybe in a stressful situation, or they're out of a normal, you know, whatever. Again, you know, it's something disruptive. Could be sleep, could be stress, could be whatever that's affecting them, and they literally forget about their children. And it seems crazy. It sounds like, how can that be? How is this a thing? But it's documented, it's been studied, and now it's interesting to see this. And you know, I think a lot of times we're hypercritical of bad, what we see as bad parenting. And we say things like, oh my goodness, how could that? How would they ever do that? The child falling into the gorilla pit, for instance. And I know this. Our soon-to-be 4-year-old is an escape artist and faster than any creature on the planet. And this guy can move at lightning speed. And I have literally had my card in the swipe mode on the card reader at the grocery store, and he's in the parking lot. I mean, that quick. He was in the cart. How did this happen? He's gotten out. I've literally had to chase him out the doors. That's happened. So I know how things can happen, and the sympathy that I have for parents who find themselves in difficult situations, my goodness, right? I mean, it's, we got to realize that we got to have a heart for those who find themselves facing just a world they've never known before. They're in this, especially new parenting. And I don't care if it's your, how many numbers it is, if you're in that early world of kids who don't sleep and kids who simply won't behave, you can't necessarily make them do the things you want them to do. They haven't developed that cognition about themselves to go, oh, okay, well, I really probably shouldn't do this. Right? Nothing but sympathy. Interesting story, to say the least. All of that, follow me on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. You'll see me there. Back tomorrow afternoon, Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Thank you for listening. God bless.